Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant, estate and tax planning attorney extraordinaire.
Mr. Grant. Extraordinaire. That's wonderful. Thank you.
It sounds almost like a new car or something, though. The extraordinaire.
That's right. That's good.
Hey, this week we're continuing your discussion of the estate planning life cycle.
And yes, we are.
We got through six stages. There's eight total stages. The last stage is a two-parter. But you're going to pretty much focus on step seven this week, the settlement system. But want to maybe do a quick review of the first six.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So in the life cycle of estate planning, there's several different steps. Of course, the past shows available by podcast on our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can go backwards if you haven't heard them and kind of fill in the gaps of education. So as a matter of fact, that's the first point, is education and exploration. We talked about the necessity of being educated before you make estate planning decisions. Mm-hmm. Then once we have that education and the exploration done, we need to actually engage. So it doesn't help just to keep learning and learning and learning. At some point, we got to take a step. So the engage and create with counseling is the next step. And that counseling is also a very important part of it, which is make sure you get outside voices. So it's very difficult to be a do-it-yourselfer. So I'm not quite sure Google knows everything about estate planning or not. So then the third step is into financial integration. Financial integration is when we've created the plan, we need to assure that all of our finances align with that new plan. Mm. So we can't have a plan that says I'm going to give 50-50 to my kids, but yet have additional people on beneficiary designations, unless that's what the plan is accounting for. So in other words, the financial integration is making sure everything that we own, whether it's bank accounts, financial accounts, IRAs, retirement accounts, homes, the whole nine yards, that needs to blend and be pointed in the same direction as the plan. Mm. Then we're into the continuation commitment. The continuation commitment is that most plans end up failing because they are just simply very old, which also means tired, right? So I'm old and tired. They're not going to operate exactly as we designed because there's too many intervening factors, whether it's family issues, whether it's legal issues, tax issues. Mm-hmm. All of these things intervene on a best scenario plan. And so as the plan begins to wear down in efficiency and effectiveness, that happens because there's a gap in being participating in the plan over and over. So continuation commitment
keeping it
is
up to date.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Is making sure we're engaged with continued education and making sure that everything is aligned as life continues to change. We talked about family reception. So is the family ready to receive? That's kind of the view that a lot of estate planning has been viewed from the creator's perspective, wealth transfer. In other words, I'm ready to transfer my wealth when I die versus is my family ready to actually receive and how are they going to do well by it? As a matter of fact, we'll come back to that a little bit in the last part of this series, which is the legacy fulfillment. And then the last part that we have explored is life adjustments. And we know that life constantly changes. So we develop a plan today, but is that plan going to suffice as we continue to age? So it depends on whether or not we can stay in our own home, whether we need additional care, whether our health is good, or if we are having health problems, if our finances actually have met the goals that we need to ensure that we can get over the hump and be self-supporting, or whether we need other things to step in. So that last part of life adjustments is life constantly moves. And so do we have a good relationship with our estate planner so that we can make sure that the plan constantly adjusts as we take step by step in life?
That's where we left off last time. And this week we're launching into what's going to pretty much, you said, take up most of this show, the settlement system.
Yeah. Yeah, so the settlement system is that in my world, I always talk about that dying is not an if clause, it's a when issue. And so we all know that this life is short, right? And so that's even biblically shown that flowers spring up and they're here today and gone tomorrow. And it's a relationship, or it's a analogy to our lives, that our lives are very short. So in my world of estate planning, this is an absolute. We know we're going to use the plan. Now, depending on your age, we hope that that's a longer period away versus a shorter period. And of course, I could sit here and tell stories of, unfortunately, losing clients in their 40s out of the blue, that they all of a sudden, they were stricken with cancer and months later they're gone. And we can relate to stories or families. If it hasn't touched your family, it's probably been in people that you know, that life is uncertain. We live in a fallen world. It's broken at its core, and things come at us. And so whether it's by accident, whether it's by sickness, we know that we don't have a guarantee of tomorrow. And so we need to ensure that our plan is ready, because we don't know when death will occur. Now, in the settlement system, what we are talking about is, because we know that the plan has to be used at some point in time, there's actually a lot more to talk about when someone passes away than I think what is common knowledge out in the marketplace. So therefore, I want to take some time with what does it mean when we have to close a plan. And this is going to be irrespective of whether we use a will plan or whether we use a trust plan, because those are really the two options that we have in estate planning. Mm-hmm. I can create a will, which is a check writing instrument. Hopefully we have the beneficiary designations aligned with that will. The theory is that that has become easier. I'm using air quotes that people can't see. That's easier than it is to use other planning methods. I would say that that's not exactly true. It depends on what your objective is. That goes all the way back to the education and engage to create a proper plan. So depending on what your goals are, depending on what your family dynamics are, I don't know whether a will is easier or harder.
I found, would you say that the will is easier on this side of eternity as opposed to the other side? And it's the reverse for the trust. The trust is a lot of work on this side, but it sure makes it a lot easier for people on the other side trying to figure things
out.
Yeah,
for those that we leave behind, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And that can be the case. I hesitate to say that that's always the case, but I would say as a general premise, I would tend to agree. And oftentimes, I do talk to clients about that, well, this work has to be done one way or the other. So it's easier if I've got your signature during your lifetime and we actually create everything to align exactly as we need it, so that the handoff can be really flawless, so that it can be as easy as possible on those that we leave behind. Mm-hmm. And for married couples, that tends to be your spouse first. So, happy wife, happy life scenario, correct, men? So therefore, creating a plan to ensure the safety of our spouse first, or the handoff of our spouse first, is just as important as thinking of and skipping over our spouse into who do we leave things to, whether it's to children, charities, or the list goes on. So in settlement, regardless of whether we use a will or whether we use a trust, there are certain things that we need to do regardless of those instruments. So let's first capture some of those things. Now, in the settlement process, everyone has to end up trying to trace and pay all the remaining bills of someone who has passed away. So if I die, then I have been living life and I have utility bills. I may have a credit card. Maybe I passed away or died in a hospital. And so that there are doctor bills and other things that are coming to my address, or things that I am personally responsible for. And that is a requirement that those things be paid first. So there's a pecking order in Washington state law that says we need to pay certain things in a particular order. And it typically starts with the closing of estates. So in other words, anything that it takes to close your estate, that could be attorney fees, that could be taxes, that could be other individuals. In other words, just the work that it takes to make sure the estate is going to be closed. Then there's other things such as creditors, but they get moved down the pecking list. So the other thing that would be higher than most creditors are we want to make sure that someone can be properly taken care of. So burial rights, cremation issues, those issues become a higher priority than a standard creditor. However, we need to make sure that we are gathering all the information as quick as possible. So I talk to clients about making sure that we know who's going to be in charge. So this is the preparation stage, as who is going to be in charge of taking control and or has the responsibility to close the estate. That individual needs to, as quickly as possible, get the address changed for the decedent going towards their address so that we can be in the collection mode. We got to get our hands on all the bills so that we can begin to prioritize them in the proper order. So that would be one of the things that we need to do administratively is when is start collecting the bills and understanding which ones are actually have a, by law, higher pecking order than the ones that don't. So it's like climbing a ladder. So we got to pay the first people first, which is the first step out of the, out on the ladder. They have the highest priority. Then as soon as they're satisfied, we can take the next one. And as soon as they're satisfied, we can keep climbing the ladder. In most cases, the last priority is the beneficiary. So in other words, that's not a payment. That is a, when everything is paid, they get what's left over.
Right.
And so one of the bigger issues is that, you know, specifically with personal property, things all of a sudden start walking out the door. And we haven't even made a determination of whether there's enough cash to pay and satisfy all the legal requirements of the estate.
This is where the executor needs to be on their toes.
Yeah, for sure.
And paying attention, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the another thing that we have to do is we need to take an inventory of the estate. So in other words, what is in the estate? What does the person have? So getting into the home and walking through, maybe taking pictures. Nowadays we have phones. It can be a lot easier. We can just hit a camera and see everything that's in the home. Start taking pictures. Start taking an inventory. And so we need to start doing valuations. In other words, we need to come up with a sum of how much was the decedent worth at the time of their passing. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple initial steps that we have to take regardless of a will, regardless of a trust. These are things that we must do when somebody dies so that we can keep the estate in a nice, clean, orderly fashion. And so we'll come right back to this after break as far as why we need to do these things and really create this nice stepping stone in the estate closing process.
Well, people are intrigued. They want to maybe have you help them with their estate planning and tax issues. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Our website is the greatest place of information. So contact information, podcasts. We also have educational series coming up that people can register for them. And that's at legacyandfaith.com.
Legacyandfaith.com. Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Mark Holland co-hosting the Legacy and Faith Show today with Paul Grant. Once again, very interesting discussion, the estate planning life cycle and up to the settlement system. And Paul, I was sharing during the break there off air, you were talking about how things kind of walk out the door.
Yeah,
in the
personal
estate,
property, right? So the stuff inside the home.
And I had a really interesting story that happened to me.
This is a great story.
Great story.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I had to be the executor of my aunt's estate, and she was lived in California, so we weren't real familiar with everything that was going on in her home and things. And turns out she had this uncle, and he'd had his eye on her beautiful Persian rug for years.
Yes.
And assured us that she wanted him to have this.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we're grieving. We don't know. Sure, take it, Uncle Harry. And off he went after the funeral. And then we find out, looking through her trust later, that under no circumstances was Uncle Harry to get the rug.
Right. That's exactly right.
Because he's been after that for years, and I've always told him I'm not going to give it to him. So, and we had no idea that it was worth anything. It was worth thousands of dollars, and he already had. He was like a rug collector.
Oh.
It's like the last perfect item he wanted for his Persian rug collections.
Absolutely.
And so we had to go find this rug and find him, and because we didn't know him. And so it was very embarrassing, very awkward, but that would
to pull it back.
Yeah, people do that. People take advantage of the situation, extended family and friends who come out of the woodwork and say, oh, they always wanted me to have this or that item. And
that's right.
So,
yeah. And maybe I always tend to think the best in people first. My hopes are quickly dashed when people pass away and I start watching them. But, you know, maybe Uncle Harry's intent was not out of greed, or that was the last conversation he knew that he had.
Right.
But yet, then,
yeah, I'm sure,
but then somebody changed their mind and said,
right,
"No, I'm perceiving that he just wants this, and he's got enough rugs. I want this to go to Mary down the street, or whoever it is." And so, but it's very amazing to watch somebody pass away and unfortunately greed strike other people. So I had somebody who recently passed away, and literally the next day, neighbors were in her home taking stuff and walking things out. Oh, in exactly that scenario. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, she said.
Right.
And yet the plan doesn't reflect that. And I had been with this person for years and has never come across that, oh, I want my neighbors or I want my community to have this, that, or the other. Rather, it's just the opportunity, and people see things and kind of come back to what the word says, right? That kind of the three evils, the pride of life, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
What we see is what we want. So yes, there's a responsibility to do our best job in caretaking for the property, but it can't be perfect. And so we're not supposed to hire guards and watch the house, right? So that's excessive, unless there's very high-priced artwork or other things that are going on. So we recently had Paul Allen pass away. So we might imagine that the security measures for his estate would be very different than the security measures of an average individual.
Correct.
So it depends on the circumstance. But we need valuations. We need to take account of what was the value when the person passed away, when on the date of their death, when they died, how much was their estate worth? That's a really an important starting point for this whole process, because the one who closes the estate does have a responsibility to two major groups of individuals. The first ones is that they have a responsibility to ensure that creditors get paid. And so creditors have a stake in this game of closing an estate. So making sure, that's why we want the mail to be transferred as soon as possible. That's why we need to start gathering this information, because the one who closes the estate has a legal obligation towards them. Then the second one that they have a legal obligation towards is to the beneficiaries, to treat them fairly, to treat them on the same level and on the same plane. So I know that you don't like your sister anymore, and she's always been the problem child, and that she has been the one that sucked mom and dad dry, and she always took all the loans. But if the plan doesn't say that that was to be accounted for, you don't get to make the unilateral decision that, well, mom gave you $10,000, and so therefore I'm going to adjust the estate. We have to follow the plan.
I've seen that scenario.
With equal deference to everybody, with equality towards everyone. And that's a real hard thing, because typically we put someone who is family in charge of this wonderful obligation. And notice how that word was emphasized. It's a wonderful obligation to close an estate. No, I tell clients that you were not chosen because you're the most responsible. It's because mom and dad wanted to get back at you and gave you this responsibility. So much for that theory that you're the responsible one. No, it really does fall upon the shoulders of often the one who is perceived to be responsible. But this is not the rose-colored glasses. This is such a fun obligation to close mom and dad's estate. This is, you have legal duties to treat everybody the same, and creditors are a part of that, and beneficiaries are a part of that. So therefore, if we take a really good account of the estate and we know exactly where the starting point was, so I like easy numbers. So my example is that I've died and now I have exactly $1 million. Because I can go anywhere from $1 million, right? Oh. So I don't even have a penny over or a penny under. It just so happened I have exactly $1 million. So now there are expenses. So now I've got to pay off. Well, I don't, because I died in my story. But my personal representative in Washington or my successor trustee, they have the duty to pay off the debt. So maybe I have a credit card. Maybe I had hospital stays. Maybe I had a long bout with an illness that caused that had a lot of money that cost a lot of money. So all these things begin to wear down that. And then at the end of the day, there's blank many dollars left over. Okay. So now I have a reporting duty to the beneficiaries, which is to show them exactly what I have done. Here's the starting point, was exactly $1 million. And there was exactly $100,000 of expenses, because, that's exactly how everything works. It's, no leftover pennies. So math is easy in my game. So now this is where that $100,000 went, or this is where the 50, or this is where the 10, however much it costs. I don't know. I've seen estates all over the board of what they cost. And so now here is an exact accounting, and this is why you are getting blank many dollars at the end of the day.
And the end of the day could be a little ways out there. A lot of times people always say, now let's get a move on. I want my part of the estate.
Absolutely.
And that's why it takes time. Are there any scenarios where you've already made your disbursements as the executor to the beneficiaries, and a bunch of surprise expenses came up from creditors and things? And
sure.
Like, what happens in that scenario?
Yep. Well, very much like what your scenario was, we go get it back. As a matter of fact, Yeah, this is one of the difficulties of using a will that most people don't understand. Mm-hmm. So in a kind of a perfect will situation, to avoid probate, what we can do is that with a will, we want to make sure that the beneficiary designations are all lined up. So what that means is that, let's say you had $100,000 at your bank account and you have two heirs. So those two heirs now, by law, because it's a contract with your bank that says, I will disperse this to your beneficiaries. So now by law, that doesn't go to probate, and the $50,000 goes directly to your two beneficiaries. Well, what if you did that with also your investments? And what if you did that with your home? So now everything has gone directly to the beneficiaries, but yet you have more obligations than just to the beneficiary. Who else do you have obligations to?
Yeah.
Well, the one who's closing the estate. You have obligations to the IRS and to taxes. You have obligations to the creditors. These are legal obligations. So now here's a pickle. How do I go pay for all of those things?
You got to use that money.
You have to go back to the beneficiaries, and it's called that they have to contribute back to the estate.
Mm.
How fun is that conversation with all the beneficiaries? By the way, I need all of you to take the money that you just got from mom or dad or whoever it was, and I need you to each write me a $20,000 check so I have enough money to close the estate. What do you think that they're going to be saying?
Well, you should have told us that sooner.
Put it down on a house. They've already spent that darn money.
And this is true.
This is exactly what happens. So in the settlement process, getting your attorney involved as soon as possible is actually one of the safest things that you can do. Is you need that support if you are going to be closing an estate. There are unwary traps out there that you can fall into. There's a lot of pits that you can find yourself into, and that's typically when I'm called into the scene. Well, you know, mom died 6 months ago, and this is what we've done. And I'm just shaking my head going, well, why didn't you call me 6 months ago? Oh, well, we didn't know what to do. Well, the first thing is just to call somebody who has actually done this many times so that we can protect you. So actually, that's a big deal. And we'll close out today's show with this, is that this is a big deal. Because you have legal obligations, when you come into my office and are closing an estate, you are my client, and my obligation is to protect you. And so this is why actually going towards an attorney and finding the right attorney who has done this many times would be a critical step in this journey in the settlement process. So in this life cycle, we need to be prepared to take on the responsibility to close the estate and to do it properly.
Okay, it's very interesting information. It sounds very familiar to me after closing several different estates. It's bringing back some bad memories.
That's all right.
One was a will, one was a trust, and I can just say honestly that the trust was much easier to close.
It typically is.
Of course, it was dealing with a lot more money, but she had done all the work ahead of time, and what a blessing it was to leave her family with this beautiful trust that she worked on. Okay, if people need help with either a will or a trust, anything else having to do with their estate and tax planning issues, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website at legacyandfaith.com. Podcasts, educational sessions are coming up, contact information. And so I'd love to assist you and get to know you. Legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, another great edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.